Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I am married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting email.
A listener who really wanted some help. He was beside himself. He was afraid that his life was not going to work the way it wanted to. And so I had to talk with them a little bit about not reacting to the chaos, but creating a life that actually met his needs. You know, that can be really, really tough. Let's face it. Sexual addiction, in a lot of ways, stirs up all sorts of chaos. And understandably, whether you're the partner of a sex addict or you are a sex addict, life can seem very, very out of control, and so very important is that you kind of look at the situation and you say to yourself, okay, what do I need to do to make things less crazy? And that's what I'm going to ask you. You know, what in your life needs to go better? Can you figure it out? Can you write out a plan so that your life, well, has some sort of order to it? Now, this man said, you know, my wife has called your show several times and described her situation. In June of 2015, I began attending a local 12-step program for my issues, and I feel like I've made progress. I started visiting an individual therapist, but I had a bad experience because he didn't believe that I was a sex addict. So I stopped going to the individual counselor, and I feel like all of my program has come from working the 12-step. Well, good for him. His counselor somehow did not feel that he had a sex addiction, even though my caller did. My wife has expressed disappointment in my hesitance to seek out another individual counselor. I've been looking for one, but most of them do not take insurance, and given my last experience, I don't want to spend thousands of dollars on something that is not going to help. My question to you is, what can a CSAT do for me that I can't do with a sponsor in a 12-step program? I'm open to the idea of visiting a local CSAT, but I know it's going to be very expensive. My wife recently asked for a separation, and my budget is already strained. Tell me, what's the difference between a CSAT and a regular counselor? Well, you know, here's what I believe. I believe you're going to get a bigger bang for your buck by going to somebody who absolutely has the expertise to get you to the right program. Now, whether you're an addict or a partner, matters not. Because the important thing is that you get the specialized help you need. Now, what is the specialized help? If you are an addict, you need somebody who gets the illness. You need somebody who knows what recovery tools you need and can guide you into the right direction. I was talking with somebody today who was so upset because she was a partner, and counselor that spoke with her asked her about her sex life, and allegedly, because I didn't talk to the actual counselor, she intimated that maybe because their sex life had been rocky, he was going outside of the marriage, and he had become a sex addict as a result. All you partners out there, if you're married to a sex addict, your sex life is not what has contributed to the problem. I mean, you may have a terrible sex life. I'm not saying that that's not a problem. That is not the contributing factor to why a sex addict is a sex addict. A sex addict has found behaviors that are compulsive, that they can't control, that they don't know what to do with. So please understand that what you are doing in the relationship as a partner has not directly contributed to sexual addiction. It may have contributed to marital problems. All right, and so for this man who says he's a sex addict and he went to a normal counselor, I don't blame the counselor for not knowing what to say or do for this person. You know, it makes sense to me that most people who are dealing with this kind of issue, they don't know what to do. And therefore, I want to encourage you that clearly, you know, get with the CSAT, at least get some consultation. You don't have to stay with the CSAT, but at least get some consultation so that you can hear what this person would advise you to do. I mean, what I know to be true for me is that when I have somebody who wants to work with me and they're not quite sure whether they should trust my judgment or not, I say, well, at least hear me out for one or two sessions. Let me give you some advice. And then let's take it that next step. Let's see if when you use my advice, things get better. Because my promise to you is if you use my recovery tools, things will get better. And why is that? Because these recovery tools are stronger. They are stronger than the addiction. So, if you get yourself to a 12-step meeting and you find somebody who can be your sponsor, and you get a list of people in the fellowship, and you call them when you're upset, when you feel the urge, the craving stacked out, and you read the 12 steps out of an essay or SAA book, do your spiritual readings, and you do your recovering readings, and you see a CSAT, and perhaps you join a sex therapy group run by a CSAT. I know this all sounds like a lot of work, but I promise you it's the formula for handling the compulsions and making your life better. And here's what I actually promise you even more. That when you do this kind of stuff, you will become a better person than you ever were before. And when that happens, things get better. So you want things to get better, you have to do the hard work, and you have to figure out how to make it work. And Patrick Carnes is the first person that will tell you, you aren't strong enough to figure it out on your own. You've got to make it happen by doing the hard work. And yet, you should get benefits right off the bat. And again, is my promise to you. You are listening to Carol Jurgensen Sheets. Hey, I'm Carol the Coach, and I'm with you every Monday night. And I'll tell you what, I feel so fortunate to get to work with you. I am disseminating information that I know will absolutely make a difference. Now, tonight we're going to be talking about brain mapping. And we're going to be using something called 30 recovery task mapping informational sheet. And you may say, what in the world is that? Well, you all know that I've been trained by Dr. Patrick Carnes. That's what a CSAT is. They've been certified. They've done the supervision. We've gone through, I always say, we've gone through a course that costs $10,000 and 10,000 hours of training. Ann Morris helped to introduce the 30 tasks of recovery map. And what we know from Dr. Patrick Carnes is that there are these 30 tasks of recovery. When I work with somebody, I want to work with them on breaking through the denial. And once they've broken through the denial, I want them to understand their addictive behavior. And then I want them to surrender to the process that they're going to need to do to get better. And then it's important to just kind of limit the damage from their behavior to establish sobriety and ensure physical integrity. Now, those are the first tasks to this recovery map. And this recovery map shows you step by step what goals you are to look forward to. And I use it with my clients, and I use it in my groups. And so I thought it'd be interesting for Dan Morris to talk a little bit about how this map is so easy to use. And it kind of demystifies the recovery process and validates the progress somebody makes. You know, I'm taking, as of last weekend, an APSATS course. Now, that's the APSATS. And APSATS is the partner training to help partners to get healthy if they are in love with an addict. And in their training, they say, hey, it's so important to do relational work in conjunction with individual work. And I know that they are in communication with Dr. Patrick Carnes to say, let's move the relationship work up, because it's not fair for the addict to have to wait till somebody actually gets through the 19th task. And I know for a fact that it can be done together. So tonight we're going to be talking with Dan Morris, and he's going to be explaining more about this map and how each step absolutely encourages sex addicts to hang in there and work through their issues so that they make a difference in their own life and in the lives of everybody that they love. And for all you clinicians that also listen to the show, I have to tell you that this map really works diligently to encourage compliance among staff so that everybody is working together to make it happen, to make recovery as simple as possible. And really, isn't that what it's all about? I absolutely believe it is. So I'm excited to talk to him because, you know, it's a simple tool that makes a world of difference in the lives of addicts. Now, what do you think? What do you believe would make your life simpler? That's the tough question, but in actuality, it's much more simple than you think. It's kind of like this show. When you need information, you can download all 150 shows and find out what the experts have to say about recovery. You know, I just read on our listserv about I experienced this myself, about clients who really, they're not readers. They like to hear information. They'd rather have audible books than have to read. And I get that. Everybody has their own style of learning. And I spoke up and I said, hey, get them to listen to my radio show because I've got experts in the field who really make a difference. And that's what it's all about. It is about finding an avenue that works for you. And I'm sure you can absolutely understand what it is people need to do to make a difference. I'm so happy that I can be a part of that because I know for a fact that when you find the learning style that works for you, you'll be much more successful in managing the program. Okay, I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, and I can't wait to talk with Dan Morris, the creator of this innovative mapping system that he got from Dr. Patrick Carnes. So, Dan, welcome to the show.
Hey, Carol. Thank you. It's good to be with you this evening. How are you?
And you too. I was so excited when I saw the advertisement for this mapping system because it really does simplify what clients need to learn. So tell me a little bit about why did you decide to make the map? Tell us just
okay.
a little bit about the map in general.
Well, we knew about the 30 tasks of recovery that Dr. Carnes put together, and it's in Facing the Shadow. It's also in the Recovery Zone. And you can find it in different kinds of ways, and it's wonderful. You can read it. It covers about 4 pages with all of the tasks, the performables, the life competencies for each of the tasks. But there wasn't any way to take a look at all of it in one picture. So that's why we put together the map. And actually, we were helped by a number of people, and they did a great job of putting together the map. The map is color-coordinated so that the first phase is green, the second phase is orange, third phase is blue, and the fourth phase of treatment is in red. So it's already organized in a way that helps people begin to take in what the process of recovery is about, what it looks like from the standpoint of the 30-task program.
Tell me a little bit about who were some of the inventors of the map. Obviously, you worked on this, and you said that you had a committee of people. Who else worked on this
Well,
map?
Actually, it started because Ben Licata, who is a CSAT in New Orleans, started putting together something, and it was a map. It was with all the tasks and the performables. You know, the performables, those are the things that you do to complete each task. And each task also has life skills that are gained or life competencies that are gained for performing all the performables in each task. But anyways, he started it, and then we looked at what he had done, brought it back here, and our graphic artists at 4Cats Creative came up with something that we thought was really, really, really good. And it's beautiful. It's We have it in different sizes. We have a map in every single room that we work in. We have two group rooms here at our facility, and the walls are huge. We have walls that go up about 10 feet, and so we have maps on each of the group walls so that everybody, well, one is 9 by 7 feet, the other one is 5 by 7 feet. So people come into the group rooms, it's right there in front of them every time they come in for treatment. It's like, you know, when people go to a 12-step group, the 12 steps and the 12 traditions are right there in front of them. So people get a chance to look at the program while they're listening or participating in the program. So it does what a map should do. You know?
Well,
you know,
absolutely.
What a map.
And one of the things that I know in working with addicts is that sometimes they can get through the first three tasks, and then for whatever reason, something throws them back. They have to go back to task number one. They go back into a state of denial. So let's kind of talk about first task is obviously breaking through denial. When we're working with addicts, they're usually in denial. Do they have the illness? Do they not have the illness? Is it compulsive? Can they control it? And this map helps them to identify what stage they're
in. Well, so people come in, and they when they come in for their very first visit with us, we begin to discuss what brought them here into treatment. So people will talk about the symptoms and the crisis they're in. People usually are coming in the midst of a huge crisis, a life-shaking crisis, and everything feels to them like it's shaking loose, breaking apart. And but there are ways that people don't necessarily haven't yet thought through what their role was in creating the crisis. So we begin talking about that in the early phase of treatment, you know, first, second, third, fourth, fifth sessions. And what we do then is we help them work on the denial issues, and we use Facing the Shadow, we use the Recovery Star Kit, and at some point or other I point at the task, which is staring at me right now in my office, breakthrough denial, and we'll point at it and everybody looks at it. And while that seems maybe innocuous and maybe that's no big deal, but actually it's very subtle. It's a joining together, and it's like as they're experiencing their denial, they're also looking at the concept, so that the concept actually helps them dig deeper. It's not just an abstract idea. It's something very visceral, and that's actually how we move through the whole map, and the map is always there. We return to it, we look at it. I mean, these are just some of the. It's a way of joining with people, they'll go to it on their own. Actually, they'll just say, "Where are we in treatment?"
So clinicians get this map, help their clients to identify where they're at. And you actually sell these to clients to help them to figure out where they're at.
Well, I'm actually it's great for the clinicians too, because I don't know how many people who are in your listening audience actually are clinicians.
I'd say about
20%. 20%? Well, what it does for us here is it helps us solidify our program and keep us all on the same page. So people can forget, actually, that there's a real program until it's visual. It's right there in front of your face. It's there when people come in the front door It's a sense of, oh, you guys really have something to offer us. And when people look, clients and staff are reminded of the fact that actually we, well, I don't know about other programs, but we here at Kavod are very careful to work through all the tasks and all the phases in the groups that we have here, groups and individual counseling. It keeps the clinicians cognizant of the fact that we actually have a whole program. That can get lost in the day-to-day.
Now, like you said, this is a system that people can find in Facing the Shadows, which I say is the number one workbook for anybody who believes they're a sex addict to read, work through the process. And then for anybody who's lucky enough, a Recovery Start Kit, which is sold through Gentle Path or through CSATs who believe in this program. We know that this program works. It will also go through tasks. So, ask you, how do clients respond working with them? Now, you've already said that they have a visceral response to being able to see stages that they need to go through to really solidify recovery. What do they think as they're working diligently on their own progress? How does the map take them to the next step?
Okay, good question. And really, the answer keeps changing over time. And what I mean is that the work, because I gain additional competence, the more experienced I am, the work itself changes. But so the work, if because there's this whole resistance to really looking carefully at themselves at the early part of the program, that's the first three tasks: the breaking through denial, understanding addictive illness, understanding sexual addiction itself, is all part of a process that leads to surrendering their own resistance to the help that's available. So the third task is called surrender to process. So I'd say I've gotten much more competent, careful in how I work with people around that. So when they look at the map, you know, it's just right there. It sits in front of us. It's a abstract kind of object until people really begin feeling and understanding how the addiction has hurt them. They can begin to identify, going way back, how the addiction started, the way that it affected them. For example, people with addictions tend to have attention deficit disorders or attention deficits, and they begin earlier in their lives because they become distracted by their addiction, sex addiction, for example. You know, that they instead of paying attention to doing homework, having some sense of clarity about what they want and need, having a family that's able to respond to needs and challenge them and offer opportunities to grow and develop. A lot of people have situations where there's a certain level of chaos, and they begin to cope with the chaos by masturbating or engaging in sexual activity of one sort or another, and that becomes a kind of a fixation. So people suffer because of that. Over time, they suffer, but they don't necessarily attach the addictive process with their suffering. So a lot of the early work really is helping people make the connections that, well, you didn't get good grades in high school. Maybe you couldn't go on to college because you were dealing with issues that were going on in your family, and you were engaged in various kinds of addictions, not necessarily just sex addiction. And that's where your attention went to. So then people begin to make that connection. So surrender to process, by the way, is approximately where people do their first step in group. I don't know exactly how you do your group work, but chapter four is all about doing the first step. Chapter four and facing the shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
So do you do a first step in your groups?
A group?
You do.
I do not require that of everybody, because certainly some people have already done the first step. Sometimes they've done it two or three times in my group. For anybody who hasn't done a first step, I encourage them to do that in the group. Absolutely.
Well, here, what we have a phase one group. So people, it's assumed that people have relapsed or they need to repeat part of the process. So people always do a first step in phase one, even if they've done it before. So for your listening audience who doesn't, does your listening audience know what a first step is? Should I explain it a little bit, or both of us explain it?
Most of them do, but I'm sure there's some people that are listening actually for the first time and they know nothing about sexual addiction work. They know that I always advocate for 12-step work as one of the 10 recovery tools. So go ahead and talk about what is the first step.
Well, in the 12 steps of recovery, the first step is admitting that you have a problem, because that's really difficult for people with addictions to do. They go on forever blaming the world around them, and then eventually the bottom falls out and they have to say, I think I have a problem, a big problem. It looks like it's addiction, and it has control over me. I've suffered. I've hurt people. It's out of control, and I'm unmanageable. So the first step is, I admitted I was powerless and that my life had become unmanageable. That's the first step. So here, and I think it's common to a lot of the treatment facilities where there are CSATs, we do a first step. It takes place, it depends on how quickly somebody works, but it takes about 2, 3, 4, 5 months for people to pull together all the information. Their sex history, family histories, where their addictions begin, when did they recognize that they were powerless, when did the addiction have more power than them, and people know what powerlessness means. Should we explain that or no?
Say that most everybody who's listening to the show experiences that powerlessness, and they know that they've tried over and over and over to stop, and it's unmanageable. They can't figure out how to stop.
Okay, so telling the story is really important, and that's really, for a lot of people, a breakthrough moment, because they put it all together. And if that's done carefully enough, with enough sincerity, and they deliver it in our phase one group, where these people have been together now 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 months, there's cohesion, there's caring, there's respect. People are listening attentively when a person delivers their first step. So the first step, everybody relates to, and it's painful, because everybody can relate to that pain. So people, if it's done well enough and thoroughly enough, the end result is people will say, I have a problem, it's bigger than me. I have an illness or a sickness, and I couldn't control it. In a way, I've been, responsible for hurting myself and everyone else, but there's also an understanding of a kind of innocence. I never intended it to get this way. It got away from me. And I have a brain issue, a brain disease, or brokenness. So the first step is essential. And when people give it, they start letting up on themselves. And they can begin thinking about other people. They come into program and they're pretty self-centered because of the crisis, so they're not thinking about other people's well-being all that well. And so the first step is and it's the third task, it's surrendering to the process. But the process that we're talking about is the process of healing, the process of rehab, the process of admitting something has been wrong, that they have to take responsibility to make it right, but that they can't do it by themselves, that they must have help from other people, and that they can also give help. That's the process. Third test says surrender to process, and when it's happening, when it's actually a happening experience, the words take on greater meaning. That's the benefit of having the map right in front of you. It's you don't necessarily look at it and read it and say, oh, my God, I'm surrendered to process. No, actually, it's just taking it in quietly, like driving down.
Absolutely. I talked with a man tonight. He was in our group, and he's getting ready to give his first step in a meeting. And he said, you know, this was such a long process. It took me hours and hours and hours to do. But what I realized was that my addiction originated from pain I felt by not being good enough for my father, and also mm-hmm. the way my brain was hijacked when I started looking at pornography. And that combination of not being good enough and also understanding how this was a brain disease, his brain had been hijacked looking at porn, was very relieving to him, and that offered him an opportunity to A, admit he had a problem, B, to understand his sexual addiction a little bit better, and three, surrender to exactly what he was going to need to get healthier. And that
right.
obviously is surrendering to the process of spirituality and realizing that only through higher power can he restore himself to from the insanity.
Right, exactly. And so people begin to find their way, a little bit like finding the way down the Olympic Road to what's the city that they're all headed for in The Wizard of Oz? Do you remember?
That's a good question, and I just saw that musical last week.
Mm-hmm. Yep, same here. And I was watching, and I was thinking about how actually the Yellow Brick Road is a pathway in a greater map that they all follow and have their own personal experiences as they begin to regain a sense of their own personal dignity in the process of realizing that they had somehow in their lives lost something precious.
Absolutely. So
Emerald City.
Thank
Emerald
you
City.
Very much. Emerald City,
you
got it.
Emerald City. It's a beautiful,
so
beautiful
this map
classic.
Is like following the Yellow Brick Road to figuring out that really they all had the power within themselves if they followed the tools. And
uh-huh.
so you may have heard at the beginning of the show, I'm not sure, but obviously Patrick Carnes advises that you follow these steps and just kind of make sure that your clients have gone through each one, they've broken through the denial, understand what sexual addiction is. They don't see it as a moral issue. It's really an issue of the disorder. It's an illness. It's a brain problem. And
right.
I am training right now with Partners of Sex Addiction, the APSETS course. And
yeah, I heard you saying that.
Yeah, and so
store it in that game.
Obviously, these people are saying, hey, we want 30 tasks of recovery to include the relationship part, which in your map is the red part, a little bit sooner than having to be down there at, what is that, 6, 18, 9, 20, task number 20. Now, tell me, since you put this together, is it possible to move tasks and maybe start on task number 20 in between task number 3 and 4. What's your feeling on that, Dan?
I think what they know, their insight is that for a lot of you just can't wait to get people starting to talk to each other and learning how that they need to deal with the crisis in a way that develops respect. You know, they have a wonderful way of working, I think, to the extent that I understand how they work, where the expectation is that they can actually work their way through the damage, both of them, both partners. So yeah, it's not, the map is not completely linear. You know, it's you can move tasks around. I mean, there are a lot of people, for example, who they have financial viability when they get to program. They are involved in the meaningful work. So they don't have to work on those things. But they do need to commit to the recovery of each family member, or they need to deal with issues around the kids, because sometimes the kids are in awful shape very early. People make suicidal gestures, and you have to deal with that.
Well, absolutely. Let me ask you, because obviously this is an exciting tool, and I said to you, is this something that you would advocate that our listeners who are not clinicians look for? I mean, obviously we talked about the fact that they can find these tasks in Facing the Shadows or in the Recovery Start Kit. What do you think? Should they buy a map and put that in their own office, or, you know, keep it up somewhere where they can stay abreast of how they're doing in their own progress?
That's a very good question, Carol, and I have an answer.
Okay.
I think if they want it right now, if they can't get it through Amazon, not yet, but they can buy it on our website.
Okay, and
it's
how
easy,
can they get to your
to
website?
Find. So the website is called Kavod Recovery. Let me spell that out. Ready?
Okay.
K-A-V as in Victor, O-D, Kavod Recovery, one word, recovery.com. And scroll down on the front page, and you'll see the button for the tasks. It's over. It's down midway down the page and off to the right a little bit. 50 tasks of recovery. 30 tasks, excuse me. And that'll take you right to the store. And we have various sizes in there, and we'll ship them right away. The smallest size is 18 by 12 inches, and that's $19.95. And we're also going to be raffling these off at the symposium in February. I don't know if you knew that or not. We're going to donate the money to LaFar. Pardon?
At the same time, I do believe, because aren't you presenting?
No, I'm not going to present. I'll just say something.
Okay, I heard that you were going to be presenting on the map. So we're going to be raffling these off at the symposium.
Right.
And what size are you raffling off? The small ones?
Well, we're raffling off the 2x3s. We're raffling out 2 2x3s. So they're wonderful. They're a great tool. I think what really I would say, would want to say to everybody here who understands the process of recovery, is that the map itself is an essential tool. It has to be a part of all the tools that you use to regain health, or if you're a clinician, to help people that you're working with. It's not just something incidental. Everybody that gets it comes back to us with very positive things to say about it. I'm very excited about it, so I'm really looking forward to sharing.
Absolutely, and I was one of those testimonials, because I use this all the time with my clients and in my groups. And I just kind of want to go over one more time for people that are listening. This map reminds you of the different tasks that you need to work through to maintain recovery. And We talked about breaking through denial and understanding your addictive illness and surrendering to the process and limiting damage from behavior, establishing sobriety, physical integrity. Of course, you know, it's so important to be tested, make sure that you're safe, that you're a safe partner and you're safe to yourself. And then the last green task is to participate in a culture of support. And, you know, that can look like, obviously, a therapy group, a recovery program, the 12 steps, Recovery Nation, whatever group it is that you decide fits your own needs. Now, yellow tasks get a little bit more in-depth. One of the things we know is that people that suffer from sexual addiction usually have at least one other addiction in their life, whether that's overeating, overspending, overworking, gambling, drugs, alcohol. It's not uncommon. As a matter of fact, it's more common to have at least two addictions, if not more. So it's understanding how they fuse together and how one exacerbates the other. And when you understand that, then you can look at how cycles of abuse interact with each other and how they create shame and how to reduce that shame. And then when you can figure out your shame, you're also able to restructure the relationship with yourself and kind of grieve all the damage that you've done in your life and all the things that didn't go well in your life. And then you kind of take responsibility and have some sense of closure and resolution, which is a whole another series of steps that you've finished. Do you want to go over the blue steps, Dan? Because I know that you work diligently with your clients on those.
Well, the first one is restore financial viability, because for let me just read them off. Restore financial viability, restore meaningful work, create lifestyle balance, build supportive personal relationships, establish health, exercise, and nutrition patterns, and finally develop a spiritual life. So the second phase is to help people learn about zone behavior, zone conduct, which is, you know, operating at your very best, learning to recover concentration, having a sense of purpose in your life, having perhaps recovering a cause for yourself. So people leave phase two with a sense of, I can do this. Maybe I can really begin to have a better job. Maybe actually I might want to work in the field that really interests me. And so people go back to college. People study things. People put together the resume. They figure out what their life's meaning is, what their heart's desire might be. Create lifestyle balance means let's take a look at how we take care of ourselves physically. Build supportive personal relationships. I love that one because there within that task is the notion that we can have lifelong friendships. And I think that's difficult to envision for guys who, by the time they get to our program here, their relationships with men generally, not always, have been either non-existent or have worn away. So we're encouraging people to develop what it takes to have lifelong relationships, establish health, exercise, nutrition patterns, live well. That's the ultimate antidote for addiction. Not an antidote. Is learning to live well. Develop a spiritual life. And that's left up for people to decide for themselves what that means. A spiritual
life. I'm sorry about that. I don't know exactly what happened. I know that somehow, some way, I disconnected, and yet I was just sitting here with the show. What I did want to say is that one of the things that I know that Dan was talking about was that, in actuality, sex addicts are oftentimes isolated, and they don't have that sense of friendship. They don't have that sense of camaraderie, and they don't have peers that can help them with their issues. And so one of the things that it sounds like these tasks do is to establish, obviously, personal relationships that are supportive in nature. I mean, that is so important to do. And so obviously, one of the 10 recovery tools that I advocate for is that I ask men to make fellowship calls. If they're in the 12-step program, they need to make those calls. If they are in a therapy group, we always share phone numbers, and they're expected to check in with each other during the week, not just during group. And that can be so helpful. There's no doubt about it. That is one of the things that clearly makes a difference in the life of an addict. So we really encourage that 100%. And when you do that, you're better well-rounded. You are working hard to not just learn how to depend on yourself, but to also depend on others. And I can't emphasize how important that is. Now, I'm going to do my best to call Dan back. I'm not exactly sure what happened. This has never happened in the history of our show. But I am going to see if I can get him called back, because he was in the midst of sharing how this program works for him and how diligent the addicts are at figuring out what they need to do next to improve their life. So here we go. We're going to give him a call as we get that. All right. Okay. So now here we go. Dan, are you back with us? I'm checking in with you. Okay, we dropped him again. Doggone it. I thought that was kind of exciting. Maybe I could get him available by giving him a call. I'm going to try him one more time and see if we can make that happen. It's dialing, and hopefully we'll get him to answer the call. You know, I'm not even sure if I'm calling his work or I'm calling his cell phone, but it is dialing. And that's what counts. You know, Dan is a master at this recovery tool chest, if you will. It's certainly what really makes a difference in people's recovery. So hopefully Dan will answer the call, and he can continue talking about how important peer support is. Are you there? Okay. Well, it shows that he's here, but I'm not seeing him there, so we sure to give it a shot. Hopefully he will call in and we can answer the call. Now, I'm going to go over the next set of recovery tools, because I'm telling you, they're instrumental in good, solid recovery. And they are that you commit to your responsibility to each family member, and you have you've got to have due diligence to resolve the original wounds that have caused so many problems in your relationship. And when you do that, then clearly what ends up happening is when you've worked on solving the wounds, the relationship no longer is as dysfunctional as it could be. And I'm sure Dan would agree with me. because I know that it is imperative. Okay, Dan is, he says, wow, what a perfect place to complete my spiel. We must find spirituality in our lives and on our path. And he says, take care and thank you for having me on my show and allowing us to showcase the map. Well, I can see I'm going to have to finish this. And I want to finish it because I'm telling you, it is amazing. After you have helped with the wounds and you have altered the dysfunction in family relationships, you can then begin to resolve issues with your children. And let's face it, that can be pretty tough. And that's where a trained CSAC can help you with that. When you work through the differentiation and you improve that sense of safety, connection, and trust, you actually develop more intimacy. And when you commit and recommit primary relationship and you explore the coupleship and decide what you need to do for recovery, you can then work on really establishing healthy sexuality. Let's face it, you know this to be true, that pornography, prostitution, exhibitionism, voyeurism, they all contribute to unhealthy sexuality, and they make healthy sexuality impossible. So once you're in true recovery, you can work on that again. And then involving family members in therapy and doing the proper couples therapy, you can have the life you deserve. And you know that's what I'm always talking to you about. At the end of every show, I always say to you that I want you to have the courage to be yourself fearlessly. And when you work on these tasks of recovery, you take your life to the next level. So thanks so much for listening to this. And I hope you'll go out and get the map. You know, he was talking about posters that are 18 by 12 inches are $19.95. And if you want a big one, let's say you run groups, or let's say that you participate in a group and you want to contribute in some way, you can get the heavy paper or the vinyl anywhere from $65 to $85. It's the 30 Tasks of Recovery. And go back to your Facing the Shadows book and take a look at that. Well, you're listening to Carol Jurgensen Sheets, and I am so happy to be with you tonight. Sorry that we had a little glitch in communication. Hey, we'll be back next week for more sex help with Carol the Coach. Have a great week.